encourage him as he gives some good news tonight.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for coming out. Pretty cold out there. I don't know, but for a guy from Uruguay, it feels cold. Well, I am really happy to be here. This is my second week out and in Pennsylvania. I'm enjoying it. My wife's actually from the North Hills, so Pennsylvania isn't the North Hills of Pittsburgh. So I've been around here a little bit, but I still feel totally lost. I don't know when I'm going to really get my... I keep talking to my wife, and I say, I have no idea where I am. So she'll ask me, and she'll say, like today I was at Penn Hills, and she says, oh, yeah, we used to play them, and I don't know, whatever. So she went to Fox Chapel, I think. That's where she went. But she didn't live in Fox Chapel. She lived in Indiana Township, I think it was, near Dorseyville Alliance. That's about as close as I can get. But anyway, that's where. Maybe that makes sense to some of you. My wife was, she went to college at West Virginia Wesleyan in Buchanan, West Virginia. Do you know that school?
I'm from West Virginia.
Oh, you are? Okay. You'd have to be to know that school. No. That's not fair. But anyway, she moved down there, went to nursing school. And her roommate, her freshman year, was a Christian and had prayed for a Christian roommate. And she got my wife, who was not a Christian. And so within about 6 weeks, she had led her to the Lord. And then she steered her in the direction of a brand new kind of weird group that had just started meeting at the above the fire hall in Buchanan, West Virginia. And it was, turned out to be an Alliance church. And she's been there ever since. And we've actually always furloughed in Buchanan, West Virginia up until now. And this is the first year we've spent in Ohio. We've always been part of the Central District. So she was a nurse for a couple of years and after she got out of college. And then she felt called to be a missionary nurse in Africa. So she went to Alliance Theological Seminary in Nyack. And I also had a journey of my own. I'm from Maine, and I was saved later in life. I was 25, and at that point, I was working as a nurse also. We're both nurses, and I was house-sitting, and one of the summers that I house-sat this farmhouse in Maine, it happened to be in a town where we have an Alliance church, and I was more interested than the daughter of the pastor than the church. But anyway, God uses all means, so I started attending the church, and I was dating the pastor's daughter. And anyway, when I felt called to be a pastor, which is what happened to me there, I asked the pastor, you know, where would you go? And he, of course, steered me to NIAC. So I went to ATS as well. Just about the same time my wife did. And in fact, we're both nurses. And so I went in to apply for the nursing job on campus. And the secretary said, well, someone applied for that job 2 years ago. In fact, here she is. And that was my wife. So she's definitely the organizer of the family. And I'm the... fly by the seat of my pants guy. So, but anyway, that's where we met. And I guess the rest is sort of history in a way. And we started dating. And we were married after our second year at Alliance Theological Seminary. We spent a year as interns, went back, finished up. The first overseas experience we had was right in New York City. There's lots of overseas opportunities there. And we had one of them. I was actually a youth pastor at a Chinese church. And we went there every Sunday. In fact, I remember working on my messages on the freeway because I worked nights as a nurse and I went to school during the day. So time was pretty tight, but I would be preparing my messages. What I remember about the Chinese church is skipping through the dog do to get to it. and in the Bronx, you know, you can imagine, and eating eggs put in tea, like dipped in tea. They're kind of like, they don't, they just look kind of tea-ish. I don't know. But I remember that. And also, they did everything in that church during a Sunday morning. They did, you know, youth ministry, adult ministry, Sunday school. They ate. They did everything because it was just a rented facility for one day. And that was our first overseas experience. And it was, it kind of started the ball rolling for us again. My wife she went to Africa for 50 days during, between her freshman and sophomore year in seminary, but was willing to put missions on hold. We were quite serious at that point. And so eventually we graduated, went to a church in Washington, D.C., and that's where I felt called to missions during a missions conference, strangely enough, just like this one. So we were actually ready to go. But at that point, we'd met all the requirements. So we went out in 1988 and went to Costa Rica. And we went with one child. Her name is Nicole. She was a year and a half old. We had a normal delivery with this child and in Virginia, where we were pastoring. And she cost just under $5,000, the delivery. And when we got to Costa Rica, we had our second child, and she cost $350. So, how about a deal? And the next two were born in Peru, and they each cost, I'm going to say, either $500 or $700 each. So you can see the difference in healthcare costs. It's pretty significant. I'll never forget the birth of our son. It was during the daytime. How about that? I think one out of four. And we seem to be, you know, night birth people. And anyway, this kid was born in the morning. And I'll never forget, there was a screen in the window in the operating, in the delivery room. Small window. Modern facility. Don't think old here. It was nice. It was a clinic. Very nice. And but there was a fly in the delivery room. And the fly kept bothering the doctor, you know, because the doctor's the only one sweating and, you know, you know, and just working, and besides the mom. Well, anyway, the fly keeps landing on the guy's forehead, and he keeps wanting to swat it, but he can't, you know, because he's got gloves on. And so finally he looks at this nurse that's in the room, and he says, "Your job is to kill this fly," you know. So my wife is in labor, about ready to deliver, and this nurse is running around with a fly swatter. And she's whacking the doctor and hitting my wife, and I'm thinking, oh, this is really good. Anyway, you know, welcome to a third world country. So we've, by the way, you know, every time we moved, we'd have a child, so the Alliance decided not to move us anymore. Thought they'd fix that. So we were 9 years in Peru, and Peru was wonderful. Peru was just a great experience. All of our experiences have been great in South America. There's been tough times, but there's been just great times. And we just try to love on the people. You know, sometimes I don't know about my missiology, but you know, I found the best thing in a lot of cases is to just show them love, to just love, love the people. They accept you that way. You can go through open doors, opportunities that open up. It's just an effective way to minister. And Peruvians are very easy to love, they're very lovable people. And they're also thieves, but it's kind of an interesting mixture. But any Peruvians here? No, I love them, and I'd tell them to their face, but they are very crafty. We were robbed 12 times in 9 years, and the last year was a bonus year, 3 times in 1 year. 12 hours before we left the country, we were robbed. So lost 3 VCRs that year. So They're very crafty, but they're really loving, and they're very servant-oriented. It's wonderful. It's just part of their culture. It's actually part of their Indian culture. And it's not uncommon to see a Peruvian wife traveling, walking about 10 steps behind her husband. That happens even today. So, guys, you know, if you want to check that out, get on the website. Anyway, the Peruvians are just very servant-oriented people. And then we went to Bolivia. Peru closed. We moved all of our missionaries out of Peru in 2001. We moved in 1999. And we went over to Bolivia. There was a need there for 1 year. They didn't have any missionary there. So we went there. Stayed for three. And Bolivia was a lot like Peru. There's a large Indian culture there. And so we were working in another church in Bolivia for those years. And then we decided to, I guess we collectively, the alliance, the headquarters, those on the field, decided to close Bolivia as well. And so we were out looking again, and we were offered Uruguay. And we went there 4 years ago. So that's been kind of our journey. We're on a southeast tack, you know, sort of across South America. And we're at the edge now. We're, you know, on the ocean. So if they send us again, it's going to have to be South Africa. And that's going to be a problem because they don't speak Spanish. But I'm joking. That's kind of been our journey, and I don't think we're going anywhere. We may just return and keep returning to Uruguay until we retire. Uruguay's totally different, and I'll tell you some about that here in a couple of minutes. But just back to our family kind of briefly. Our children have always gone, not always, but except for the time we were in Bolivia, they've always gone to boarding school in Quito, Ecuador. And we've had a fantastic experience with boarding school. It's been a very positive thing for us, for our family. We feel very close. They've had great dorm parents in Quito. And actually, my son Nathan, who's 15 now, is the last U.S. MK in Ecuador. He will turn out the light, as we say. He will be it. And that school, when my kids started going there were 40-plus children just in the Alliance dorm. And there were other dorms as well. So you can see how the whole thing has been shifting in South America. We've been shifting our missionaries out of South America to other countries around the world. And so that's just an example of what's been happening. The school actually was sold about 4 years ago. And it's privately run now. And most of those 500 students or so in Quito are Ecuadorians. There are a few other Asians and whatnot, sons and daughters of businessmen that live in Quito. But I wish my kids were here. They love Quito. They can't wait to go back. In fact, my daughter's flying down for graduation, not her graduation, some friends graduating in June. And so they can't wait to go back. My daughter will be a senior next year, and my son a junior. So I think we'll stop there. Our whole family loves South America, and they are actually behind me totally standing here. I talk to them every day, and they're always giving me ideas. My daughter's the one who did all the PowerPoints that I show. I have 5 different PowerPoint presentations. She did every one of them. She and my wife have been speaking quite a bit in Ohio, where we're living. And she does some of the speaking, too, my junior in high school. So this is kind of a family effort, even though I'm just one representative here tonight. And like the pastor mentioned, we have 2 older daughters, 19 and soon to be 21. The oldest is at Geneva, a sophomore, and my 19-year-old is a freshman at Wheaton College in Chicago. So that's kind of our journey. Let's see how we do with this. This is a PowerPoint. It's about Uruguay, so sit back, relax, and enjoy this. The background music's Spanish, so maybe some of you will pick up a little bit of it.
Señor, por haberme elegido a mí, pensaste en mí para que yo viva para ti. Tú tienes un plan, maestro, para todo aquel que te busca. Quiero descubrir mi vida, invertir en los propósitos que tienes para mí. Yo quiero crecer, imitarte a ti, ser como tú, Jesús, vivir para ti. Tengo que crecer, imitarte a ti, mi deseo es hacerte sonreír. Gracias, Señor, porque en tu palabra puedo ver maravillas que solo tu presencia puede hacer. Yo no quiero conformarme con lo que tú hiciste en otros. Quiero descubrir mi vida, invertir en los propósitos que tienes para mí. Yo quiero crecer, imitarte a ti, ser como tú, Jesús, vivir para ti. Tengo que crecer, imitarte a ti, mi deseo es hacerte sonreír. Yo quiero crecer, imitarte a ti, ser como tú, Jesús, vivir para ti. Tengo que crecer, imitarte a ti, mi deseo es hacerte sonreír.
Well, what do you think? Nice place to live. It is. It actually is a very nice place to live. Safest place I've ever lived. We can even go camping in Uruguay. It's great. We've taken our tents with us for the last 20 years, and this is the first place you can actually put it up. It's great. In Peru, it would be slashed, and they'd take everything out. Bolivia, well, actually, I guess I take that back. We did camp a little bit in Bolivia. And now it's very safe where we are to do things like camping and different things. I want to give you a few fun facts about Uruguay. These are just kind of... We live in a small town. It's up on the border with Brazil. So in our church, we worship in Spanish and Portuguese. We usually preach in Spanish, but we sing in Spanish and Portuguese. Most people there are bilingual. They've grown up that way. All of our cable TV and all that sort of thing come in from Brazil. So if you want to watch TV, it's usually in Portuguese. So that was something very different for us. We know Spanish, but we don't know that much Portuguese. Still don't. But we got by. And our church in Chuy, in our little town, we have one service on Sundays. It starts at 8:30 at night and ends about 11 on a good Sunday. And then by the time you've greeted everybody and everybody's gone home, it's midnight. and we get to bed about 1 a.m. That's a typical Sunday for us. Actually, everything starts at night in Uruguay. Even restaurants, they open at 8 in the evening. So it takes a little getting used to. Anybody here night people? Anybody like the night? Yeah. Yeah, well, there you go. You'd fit right in. And even if we teach, classes often will start at 8 or 9 at night and go to 11. That's kind of a normal. So I remember when they asked us if we wanted to come to Uruguay, one of the questions was, are you night people? And I thought, well, that's kind of foolish, you know. But I've learned that it wasn't a foolish question. You know, it's kind of important. If you like to stay up at night, it's a good place for you. You also don't call a Uruguayan before 10 a.m. in the morning. You know, there's that other part of it. So anything before 10, you're apt to get a pretty grumpy Uruguayan on the phone. So just don't do that. Wait till after 10 in the morning and it's free game. How do they do it with the children, you know, because children go to the service? Well, during school year, there's two, what's this word in English? I said it so much. It's tornos, two sessions. And one is in the morning from like 8 to 1 in the afternoon, and the other one is from 1 to 5. My kids always thought that was real cheap. They only have to go to school 5 hours a day. What do you think? Wouldn't that be great? You still get credit for it. But anyway, the littler kids go in the afternoon. So it's just the teenagers that are grumpy. Because they have to, you know, they're up until 1 in the morning and they have to get up at 7 and, you know, be at school at 8. So that's a little rough. But anyway, that's how they do it. Uruguayan, the whole school, they're very proud of their education. 98% literacy rate in the country, highest of any country in Latin America. Free high school education and college. So, any of you paying for college bills? Uruguay's free. You know, there is that part of it that's they're very proud of. They're very literate. They're very they're well read and up on things, current events. I'm always amazed at the knowledge they have of Hollywood stars. It's incredible. They know way more than I do about people in Hollywood, and rock singers. They know all the rock singers, and you know, so they're pretty up to date, for whatever that's worth. So here's some fun things about just where we live. Okay, we live in a small town. It's about 10,000 people. It swells in the summertime as a tourist town. We have beaches, and we're right on the Atlantic Ocean. We've been living right near the beach. And it'll swell to 20,000, maybe even more than that. And our town is 32 blocks. That's it. The postman rides a bike all over town. He delivers the mail. And actually, they split the town in two. One guy drives a bike, and the other guy rides a motorcycle. And that's the two most common kinds of transportation in our town, bikes and motorbikes. I just love the mail system because the mailman went to our church. In fact, he's an elder in our church. And so whenever we got mail, he would call me up and say, "You have a letter at the post office." And I was like, wow, I feel important. So I really liked that part, you know. I thought it was great. You know, the post office calls you when you get a letter. Oh, that's pretty sharp. But anyway, that's kind of one thing. We lived, where we lived, it was, our address was bus stop 14. Better than zero, right? Well, that's where we lived, bus stop 14. And we lived in the big yellow house. At bus stop 14. So I always thought that was kind of cool, too. I've never had a shorter address. My address is just Peter Marshall, post office, Chuy, Uruguay. All it's got to do is get to the post office, and then it gets to me. So I thought that was great, you know. I thought that was pretty uptown. So anyway, that's one thing about the little town we live in. They say there's more cows than people in Uruguay. Have you ever been to Iowa? No? Well, even Pennsylvania. But you'd have to get rid of a few of the hills here. But it's very flat, kind of roly, but not like Pittsburgh roll. But not rock and roll, just roll. I have never seen so many hills and valleys in my life. I don't know how you live here. But anyway. It's like Iowa, but without the silos. So it's just a ranching country. It's actually very, very pretty. It's a little on the roly side. The Uruguay means, I was telling your pastor this, the word Uruguay means the land east of the river of the painted birds. Now, I don't know what part of Uruguay means what, but, you know, you put it all together and that's what that means. And we're east of the Rio Plata, which separates us from Argentina. It's a huge river. By the time it gets to Uruguay, it's like an ocean. It's so far you can't see across it. And we have ferries that cross into Buenos Aires from our capital, which is Montevideo. But we also have lots of birds. It's great. When you go on a trip, we travel with a bird book. And you know, you can mark off the birds and just some really neat birds. And the, what are they called again? Canaries? No. The green birds? Parakeets? They're the little one, you know? Parakeet? Well, we have them in flocks like your chickadees. You know, just and it's amazing to see all these green birds fly off from the side of the road. It's just great. I feel like going out there with your butterfly net, you know, and rounding them up. But anyway, Uruguay is just a very tranquil, this peaceful country. The thing that impressed us, I remember when we first got there, were the roads. They're just amazing roads, really good roads coming in and out of the capital city. I mean, they actually have guardrails, they have bridges, they have lines on the road. I mean, we're talking first class. It's been great. So that's, most missionaries that go there are kind of surprised by that. And I'm about out of time on this part. Don't have any heat in our houses. We are as far south as from the equator as South Carolina is. Okay, so that kind of gives you, we have four seasons, but the temperature doesn't get below 38 usually. I've never seen it colder than that. But that's a little chilly without heat. So the way we do it in the wintertime, and our kids are with us in the winter because, you know, it's reverse season. So they're on a North American school calendar. So they get out in June, like you guys are going to, and they go back in August. So they're there during the winter in Uruguay. So we have, on a pegboard, we have six water bottles with everybody's name on it. And before we go to bed, we, like, heat up a big thing of water, fill up the water bottles, and then everybody makes a run for it. And they just run for the bed and, you know, jump in and somehow the water bottle, you know, gets you through the night. So that's what we've been doing. We actually have one room, our kitchen, that you can heat. We had a wood stove in it because it has doors that you could block it off. The rest of the house was, you couldn't block it, any room off. And it's very common. I don't know of any houses that have heat in all of South America. Maybe central heat I've never seen in South America. So it's pretty common. And cement houses, so, you know, a little chilly at times. But anyway, any questions up to that point of what I said? We're going to go into a little different part here. Good. All right. Quickly, I want to just give you just a little bit about what the reality of Uruguay is like, okay? Especially for us. Uruguay is a postmodern society. Don't think of Uruguay as being in South America. Think of it as being in Europe, because that's pretty much what it's like. We have daily flights to Madrid from our small little airport in Montevideo. There's a working agreement, open border, between Uruguay and Spain. So a lot of people go to Spain to work because Uruguay is a socialist country. There's not a lot of work. And even doctors earn a very standard wage. So it's difficult to get ahead. If your family had money, then you have money. But that's really about the only way that you can get ahead in Uruguay. I mentioned the free education. The only thing about that is I have found that Uruguayan teenagers get really frustrated because at the end of every class they take, they have to take a comprehensive exam of that class. And if they don't pass the exam, they don't pass the class. And so I don't know of more than a handful of people that have ever made it through high school. They usually end up halfway through high school and then dropping out. So it isn't actually as good as it sounded, the system that they're in. They just make high school very hard. They only have limited spots in college anyway. And I think they try to do a sifting process, and that's one of the ways they do it. So there's not a whole lot of professional jobs in South America, especially in Uruguay. Most of the people that I know tend a store or maybe do some kind of tourist work with tourists in our town. Some of them worked at cambio houses where you change money, but just not a lot of jobs out there. So we have some real social problems. One of them is kind of a hopelessness. It's kind of eked into society or dripped into society. And so our suicide rate is the highest in all of Latin America. And in Uruguay, in three provinces, it's the highest in the world. 40 out of every 100,000 take their lives every year. And it's between men of ages 40 to 55, which is sort of an unusual age span for that kind of, for a high suicide rate like that. So, and then the religious climate is, one other thing before I leave that, we have an 80% divorce rate in Uruguay, very high. It's just a very social, very secular country, very secular. And so they've just got, you know, the family is really fractured, just incredible. I mean, it's not uncommon to have, you know, three sets of families, children, wives, you know. That's kind of the norm, actually, in Uruguay. Religious climate, it's a declared secular country. They don't celebrate Christmas. They call it the Festival of Lights. They don't celebrate Easter. They call it the Week of Tourism. The Roman Catholic Church doesn't exist for all intents and purposes in Uruguay. Just isn't there. We had a very small little church. It probably sat like maybe 20 people. And that was the Roman Catholic Church in our town. So that's, for me and for most Latin countries, that's very different. There's a strong influence of Spiritism from Brazil. We've run into that a lot. Different kinds of worship. They're worshiping the spirit gods. And there's other cults that have moved in, had very good success, because it's almost like there's kind of a vacuum that's been created in Uruguay spiritually. And the Mormons have built 100 churches in Uruguay. They have the most churches of any denomination anywhere in the country. And other cults as well. And also strange to find that the Masons have been in Uruguay for years and years, and they are in the upper level of society. All the businessmen, the influential people, are Masons. So that's kind of a surprise, too. So there you have it. It's kind of a difficult place in many respects, especially religiously. Any questions up to that point? Yes.
I'm really surprised there aren't any Catholic churches.
Why is that? Well, there's a few Roman Catholic churches. Well, I was told that in the 50s, the 1950s, the government made began to attack religion and push religion out of the schools totally. And that included all religion. All religion. The other thing that might have an influence on that is in some of the other Latin American countries, a lot of the Catholics have Indian background. And Uruguayans, there is no Indian population at all. It was wiped out. They were all killed off. So maybe those two factors have something to do with it.
Also, you mentioned high school.
It's hard to get ahead in Uruguay. And the family structures are very stressful. You know, you can imagine being married three times or with three different spouses and the children, and you know, there's a lot of pressure. So I think maybe that's what's happening with the adult males. I don't have all the answers though. Okay, yeah.
Well, what would you say is the biggest need up front that people have that you have seen them be hungry for God? Is it loneliness or need of forgiveness? Is it general, despairing from secular living? Or have you seen any open door, like maybe a common open door that hits the culture with the gospel?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have seen the marriage issue. There's oftentimes somebody be living alone with their children, the spouse is left, and they're in need. You know, they're searching. That's oftentimes a good time to go in and try to help. And part of that help is sharing the gospel. Times of need seem to be, you know, and maybe that's true everywhere. But, you know, if there's been an accident, an illness, something unexpected, losing their job, lots of times that's a really good time to be at their door. Great question. Yeah.
Why do you think the Mormons have been so successful?
Well, I need to kind of paraphrase that a little bit, because they have 100 churches, but they don't have a wide acceptance in Uruguay. Okay? But they're there, and they're there constantly, and their missionaries are knocking on doors. The way they try to affect the community. You know, they try to have a good influence on the community. They get involved in some community projects, helping with sewer lines sometimes. They'll go to a poor area and evangelize the kids, spend time with the kids, play basketball with the kids. You know. Yeah, they do some things right. Yes. Do you raise your hand? Okay, I just want to,
Is society prevalent there, or with high suicide rates and the fracture of the family?
Is it crumbling?
Yeah, coherent society anymore? Are the bigger problems of mental health issues?
Not that I'm aware of, no. No. Good question. No, not that I'm aware of. Well, I'll tell you one thing that's really affecting Uruguayan society right now is young people aren't staying. They are not staying in Uruguay. they, as quick as they can, they leave. And that's affecting, it's becoming an older, retired, place to retire, you know, there's no way to get ahead type of place. That's what's happening in Uruguay, really, kind of in a nutshell. Okay.
Is it predominantly farmers or not?
Well, the land is predominantly agriculture. But the farms are actually quite large, and only a few hands run a farm. It does, the whole gaucho culture in Uruguay, the South American cowboy culture, that's very real, very present. You see it every day. They're still riding horses, rounding up cattle. Looks like the West, you know, 100 years ago. And that's very real. But I don't think it really... the gaucho culture is there, but it's not a major... Well, it is major, but there's an awful lot of Uruguayans that aren't involved in the gaucho culture, you know. So they're doing other things. Now, that's kind of crossing into a different culture. There's a certain number of them. Kind of like gypsies in, like, Brazil. There's that whole gypsy culture. There would be some similarities.
Well, where does your produce come from?
A lot of it comes from Brazil and in country. So.
And price-wise?
It's great. Mostly great. Gas is really expensive. $4.50 a gallon. So next time you go to the pump, say, praise the Lord, it's just $3. But, that part's expensive, but like most stuff is pretty inexpensive. Fruits and vegetables are incredibly inexpensive. $1 or $2, maybe $3 for a week of fruit and vegetables, you know. So you have to pay that for one pineapple here. So, yeah. Anyway, how are we doing? I probably need to wrap things up. I wanted to talk to you about marriage encounter tonight, because that is one way that we are trying to help out. We find an open door with marriage encounter, but I'm going to have to save that till tomorrow night, I think. We've been mainly involved in three or four areas of ministry. We are a cell church. What does that mean? A cell church is another way to say a house church. And we have 20 house churches, our congregation. We meet once a week in the house, but only 3 people from the congregation go to one of those meetings. And anybody else is an invite. That's all we allow from church. So the focus of the house church is to be evangelistic. And that's the main way we evangelize. We've been involved in that cell church ministry. We've also been involved in marriage encounter. We've been using another denomination, SIM, that has a marriage encounter up and going. They've had it for 10 years in Montevideo. And they meet twice a year, 2 weekends a year. And so we've been sending 2 couples to that event every spring and fall for the last 4 years. And... one couple is a believer. Usually it's a believer couple from our church, or maybe a pastoral couple that we're just giving them a weekend, you know, to take a break. And the other couple are always either one or both are not saved. That's how we set that up. And we've had a lot of fun trying to find unsaved couples. You know, maybe I can tell you a little bit about that tomorrow night. Incredible sometime. You know, here I am offering a free weekend in Montevideo, romantic weekend in Montevideo. And sometimes I have to go through 8 or 10 couples before I find anybody who will accept. But it's resistant, but I can get it. You know, we've had a lot of fun praying through that one. And then I've been doing adolescent ministry for the last 4 years. That's, you know, that's a wild ministry. It's up and down, you know, like anywhere. It's just that age. I've been with adolescent boys, had some success. We've also had a girls' ministry going parallel. And we've had some really fun times with that ministry, some real good results. I can tell you a little bit about that tomorrow night. And that's the main areas that we've been working in, marriage and young people and evangelism through cell or house churches. So, you know, it's a Tuesday night, and it might be a good idea to just wrap it up, get a little refreshment, and go home. Thanks for being so attentive and for your questions. It's been great.
Thank you.
You're welcome.